And then all of a sudden it's innuendo, it's speculation, and it goes to the point where at the end of the day, no matter what you do or what you say, mud sticks.
Even after the introduction of free agency, AFL player movement is still a club-dominated business. That's the inside view of leading player agent Marty Pask, who here also calls for the scrapping of free agency compensation and expresses concern about the general media's handling of sensitive player issues. Also, he goes behind the scenes on how a trade is done and of his worry for some players as they transition out of the game. We're going to take an inside look into the workings in the world of a leading AFL player agent in our next instalment of In The Game, and we're going to do that through the eyes of the man sitting across the table today, Marty Pask. Welcome.
Thanks, Damien. Thanks for having me.
It's a world that fascinates the outsider, and yet having seen you work and others in your field work for some time, I think the outside view, the view the public has of the AFL player agent, would be different if they actually knew what went on. It's a bit more gritty than they might be led to believe.
Oh, it's certainly an interesting industry. There's no doubt about it. You wear many hats at many different times. You can be talking about all sorts of different issues that obviously we've seen reported more recently across the weekend through to contract negotiations, social issues, mentoring, helping, assisting. There's no doubt that you do wear a lot of hats.
I think all aspects of life have changed significantly, have they, when it comes to a big business that the AFL world is. But the life of a manager, you've got to be so many things, and you're only qualified to be so many things under that watch, aren't you? I mean, are you a counsellor more than an agent these days?
Well, that's important. It's important to understand what your actual philosophy is as an agent, or more broadly, what your philosophy is as an agency. So, like for myself personally, I always make sure that I help the player and build a relationship with them to understand actually what it is that they require. So first and foremost, I believe your core business always has to be your ability to understand the market value, help a player through trade, free agency, obviously the business side of Australian rules footy and how they actually move through the marketplace, stay at their club, etc. But then there is that care and that empathy that comes with it. So you've got to have an ability to help an individual through some difficult times. There's no doubt about that. But then also understand actually where you play. So for example, I'm not a trained psychologist. I obviously have dealt with a lot of issues that have been prevalent in society with some players. There's no doubt about that and other athletes in other sports. But it's about giving them the help and assistance and the framework around them and ensure that you guide them in the right area should they need some help and some guidance and some assistance. So I think it's important to understand the individual and what they need. And then if they do fall on hard times, then you've got the appropriate people in place, whether it's the AFL Players Association, the Cricketers Association, whatever it may be, to then help and assist that player.
We'll talk about all those issues you've touched on there in those previous few moments. But the area that I think fascinates everyone is the player movement space. And you were caught up last year inadvertently, or should I say unwantedly, in a trade of a player you thought was going to play for one club his whole career in Ryan Burton, as Hawthorn set out to transact with Port Adelaide over the acquirement of Chad Wingard. Because it was so public at the time, would you mind if we use Ryan Burton as an example as to what happens in this space, given we have a feeling for it already? A player who had 4 years at Hawthorn Footy Club, thought he was going to be there for a long time, in the end shunted out the door to transact. Can you take us through that player's world and that type of world when that happens?
Well, it's very difficult, no doubt, because you're dealing again with emotion, and that's the hardest thing. And the only thing that you ever want in a situation like that is for honesty and to be perfectly clear and upfront with Hawthorn. You know, their list manager Graham Wright was completely honest and gave us a great framework in terms of what was going to happen and how that was going to occur. The hardest thing then is to help the player work through that situation to get them a really good outcome. Now, in this situation, it worked out well because Ryan grew up a Port Adelaide fan. He obviously came from Adelaide. So there was a lot of pieces there that could be easily managed to help that player make that decision. In terms of the player movement market, it's very hard. And I guess for myself, and I know speaking to a lot in the industry, you get really frustrated when every time you can almost cut and paste, someone will say players have too much say. And that's really frustrating from where we sit on the side of our fence, in the sense that a player very rarely gets to choose his desired outcome in terms of movement. And when we talk about free agency for a moment,
when you say player though, are you referring to the run of the mill player? Because it's been quite well known now that the bigger name players will get to where they want to get to every single time.
Of course, but again, we're talking about a real small percentage of the competition. So if you add up every single player in the competition and how many each year get the ability to then say, hey, I want to go play at that football club, there's very few.
Mm.
And every year we quickly forget about the amount of players that get their decision made for them. And they're the ones that get delisted at the end of the year and their career is over. And then all of a sudden at 23, 24, they're out there playing local footy or they're doing something else. We don't have an ability as an industry to have an export market like we do in cricket or rugby, where all of a sudden an Australian rules footballer gets delisted at 23 and then I'll go play in Japan or I'll go play in China or I'll go play in the UK. Their career essentially ends at 23, 24. Now, there are more of those players than there are of the players that at the end of each year say, well, I'm a free agent. And don't forget, when they are a free agent, they're having given a number of years service to that one particular football club. So they then get an opportunity then to make a decision on where they want to play. So before that, there's a lot of players that have had their futures or papers stamped prior to that. So I think that the player movement space is a very fair market, in the sense that, one, you have free agency where a player gives a select number of years service to then pick where he wants to get to, but then also, two, with a trade, you're actually getting something back. And free agency, you're getting compensation pick as well, don't forget, as well.
Well, you've been outspoken on that. We'll jump into that space now.
Yep.
You're one of the first. I feel in a position of clout when free agency was introduced to the AFL system, who queried, and from memory it was immediately, the compensation that is attached to a club losing a free agent.
Well, because a club does what you can forgive every club for wanting to do, and that's getting something back in return. Now, if you look at free agency in a lot of areas in other sports, and you look at particularly the NBA, for example, where they'll just go and a player and that particular franchise will then have to go and replace that player. Now, the only added value they've got is they've got a spot on their roster and they've also got a fistful of cash that they're able to attract free agents with.
I'll put it to you that this is being manipulated by the clubs themselves, this free agency compensation.
Well, the exact way it's being worked is that if a player leaves that club, I'd ask you to go back through every free agents that's left, and then how many clubs has actually then replaced that player with another free agent. And it'd be very few, if not, I would say, none, just off the top of my head.
And for those who don't know what you're saying there, if you do replace a free agent with a free agent, you lose compensation.
Of course you
under the system.
So the way the system works is that it's your gross in versus your gross out. So there would be...
We've had examples of clubs trading a free agent in just so they don't negate the free agency compensation situation.
So, and clubs are doing that, and you can forgive them for doing it because it's smart list management. So if you're losing a really good player and you know that you're going to get a really good draft pick out of it, which means you could then go out and get another player that could potentially beat your club for the next 8 years, I would argue that that's smart list management, which it clearly is. And that's the frustrating thing.
Do we need to get rid of it, the compensation?
Well, I think...
I believe we do.
Well, if you're going to go down a whole free agency and have a free market where clubs and players can then move freely... If you were to move it, what would happen would be you would lose a free agent, but then that club that loses the free agent is then armed with a spot on their list and salary cap room. So then all of a sudden they become a player in the market.
Which they've got as well as getting the compensation though, Marty.
They do. They do. But you're then not allowing the club then to go out and get that free agent, because you don't want to upset that compensation pick that you've got. So if you remove that compensation pick, then all of a sudden with list management then saying, well, hang on a minute, I've lost a player on X amount of dollars, I've now got room in my salary cap and a spot on my list, I can then go out and target another free agent and I can be a big player in it, in that particular free agency market, not waiting a year, in that market.
You get the very clear picture on what happens in this space. We on the outside obviously have a view on it, but you see it unfold every single year. is, though, what's happening in recent times, yet again another layer to the rich getting richer and the poor getting poorer with this trade system that we've got? And when I say trade system, trade and free agency.
Well, I don't – look, the hardest thing, again, is it would appear that – again, that's an easy headline for a lot of people.
But there's enough evidence for us to go down this path quite regularly. And I think you would subscribe to part of it at the least.
The one thing I would say is that every club needs to be at its best in a lot of areas nowadays. I think people get too tunnel vision and just look at a club and say, oh, their list is this, their list is that. But there's so much more that goes into list management and retaining players. There's welfare, there's high performance, there's facilities, there's even things like the draw and being able to play Saturday night games and Friday night games and playing in front of big crowds for home and away.
Which the big clubs have all of.
Of course they do.
So and the smaller clubs don't have what you've just rattled off.
But then the one thing that you do see with the smaller clubs, and you say smaller by what membership base or whatever it may be, is that they then have to be better. And how do they look at ways to be better to challenge those clubs? And just because you've got the 70,000 on Saturday night doesn't mean you're a better club. You're
a more appealing club.
But you are on paper. But how do you not know that you're a better club in terms of welfare, or you're a better club in terms of high performance, or you're a better club for that particular player at that point in time? I don't think it's as easy as everybody sitting there saying, oh, because they've got 90,000 members, they've got 80,000 members, they play at the MCG, all of a sudden, oh, well, that club's going to be able to attract more players. It may look like that on the outside, but I would hope, and certainly from my examples, that players are a lot more intelligent and smarter in terms of what they actually want. And what they actually, how they actually want to pick their club.
Do they want success now? Is that number one on every list of every player who wants to leave his club?
Not always. And I think that's an easy headline too. As a club, will a lot of players, particularly in the media, will be reported this particular player, they want success, they pick this list because of those sorts of things. But a lot of the time, there's a lot of different reasons that go into it. So
if it's not number, what's number one if it's not that?
Well, sometimes it might be family. Sometimes it might be the need to get home because they need to be at home.
Where does money fit in?
Well, money's dependent on different people's philosophies. So again, you've got to sit down with a particular athlete and say, right, these are the situations. Now, I've always believed as an agent, you present options. So you sit there and you present options. Now, the option might be to stay at this particular club. The next option might be to leave and have this particular lifestyle. And the next option might be that their career's coming to an end and they might want to play in a flag. So money's not that important. Money might be number five on the list. Number one may be, I'll take less. I just want to play in a side that I believe that will play finals. So then all of a sudden you're doing list management. You're looking at a different club's list and your chances of playing finals.
Do you have a set formula that you apply to every single scenario?
You can't. Okay. You can't. I don't believe
if you were to have a list of priorities, what would be the framework around that? With player X wanting to leave club, regardless of age, stage, status.
Well, why do you want to leave? I mean, that's
the first question.
Well, that should be your first question to ask is actually, why do you want to leave? What's the key driver in your decision that you feel that currently right now a club wants to retain you, they've put a contract offer to you, and you're sitting here saying, I don't want to sign it. Why don't you want to sign that right now?
What if it is a player being targeted? Clubs come to you and says, we want you to put this player on your club. And again, for our listeners here, we can't talk specifically. You're not going to give up confidences in any forum. So I understand all that, and that's why I just want to back over that. We are talking generics here, but a club targets one of your players on your 50-strong agents list. Do you always relay that to the player, or do you make that decision sometimes on behalf of the player to say, no, we're not going there?
Well, again, you need to understand the personality of the player and how that affects them. So if a player will instruct you, if you have a good relationship with them, in terms of when they want to be spoken to about certain issues and I guess a strategy that'll formulate for the year. So every time you have a player coming out of contract in that particular year, you've got a strategy behind that that suggests the question you're asking at some point in time, you've got to have a direct conversation and say, right, these are the options. And one of those may be that club A, B, C and D have inquired about the potential availability of you and whether or not you'd look at a move. Now, I would always think that a conversation then needs to be had with their club where they're currently playing at the appropriate time to say, well, what are we doing with this particular contract? Are we going to extend it? Are we going to hold it? Are we going to wait? and then work towards key dates in the season to say it might be round 7 we catch up, it might be round 15, whatever it may be, and keep an open dialogue with that particular player. There have been players in the past that don't want to know anything, and they might not want to know anything till the bye, or they might want to know something every single week. And you've got to respect that. And that's why there's not that one-size-fits-all philosophy that you can take into every single player and treat them all the same.
The whole dynamic of club and player agent, it's a changing landscape. We've got some very big companies in this game. Yours probably is more on the, I won't say boutique, because with 50 on it, it's more than that. But it once was a boutique arrangement. Do you feel that some agents, or maybe let's use the plural word of that, agencies, would make a decision based upon what's best for them, not necessarily the player? I say because some agencies have multiple, sometimes 8 players on a list, and they're going to play good cop and bad cop on some. Do you think that has gone on?
Well, I can't speak for other people because I'm not in the room, and I wouldn't have a clue to answer your question, to be perfectly honest. But I would say, and I would suggest, that in our industry, there is a lot of good agents that would do the right thing by their players every single time. And I think that it's too easy, again, for people outside to look at it that way and say, oh, well, he's got too much control, or he's got too much say. But I have never, in 10 plus years of doing this, heard of any examples or felt that anyone behaves in that particular way, no.
Do you think some have got too big? And the TLA Stride arrangement is one that I certainly hear from certain people in the industry that has got too big.
How big's too big? I mean, if they've got too many players in the sense that they can't service them all, or they can't give them all the right advice, that's for them to answer. I don't know. I'm not in those four walls. I can only go on my philosophy and what I like to do as an agent, and I stick to that. I play in where I feel that I have the best chances to retain clients and sign clients, and we'll always go down that path. And if another agency has a different philosophy, well, that's their competitive advantage, and that's for them.
Back to Ryan Burton for a moment. Why didn't you just say, why didn't he just say, no, I don't want to go anywhere? You have sold me the dream. You've drafted me as an 18-year-old. You've developed me into being a runner-up and a rising star, and you've told me week upon week for those 4 years I was at your club that I'm your future. And then at the end of a particular season, we don't want you because we can get access to someone else. Why doesn't he just stay?
Well, he had every right to if he wanted to. He was contracted. But at the end of the day,
the club doesn't want you. It's hard go down that path, isn't it?
It's hard. And not only that, it's that, you know, to be fair, there's another club in this. And Port Adelaide put together a really good case to bring him over to Adelaide. And you look at clubs, and this is back to your earlier point. You look at Port Adelaide and what they've been able to do over the last 10 years to get themselves to a position where they have, in terms of being able to attract players from other football clubs. I think it goes back to your point earlier on where, you know, 10 years ago, we're talking about a club that was covering seats with banners during games, during home and away matches, and we're finding it hard to attract players and finding it hard. All of a sudden in 10 years, they've obviously done something for a club to be able to then attract players. And that was highlighted in last year's trade period, I felt as well, where, you know, obviously a player like Ryan Burton, they've been able to attract and get him back to their club. So I think that, again, there's a perfect example of a club that, you know, you wouldn't say is in the top 2 or 3 clubs in the AFL in terms of members and where they are, but what they've been able to do over the last decade and what they've been able to bring into their footy club and their retention of players, you know, they're obviously doing something that they feel is good enough to attract players. And that's probably your earlier question, is that it's not all about just wanting to play at the MCG on Saturday night or Friday night. It's a lot of different things that go into it to attract a player. And that's certainly what they were able to do with Ryan in that case. And in the end, he felt comfortable and wanted to go and play at Port Adelaide.
What are you seeing as the biggest problem in the game from a player's perspective now? I mean, the advent of the widespread reporting now on player issues, and it's been done, I would argue, mostly quite professionally and respectfully. Mental health, a massive issue. Gambling, alcoholism, what else?
I would say particularly, too, to add to that, the media. And the media has just changed dramatically.
And when you say that, are you referring to what was once the mainstream / traditional media? Are you lumping in here whole social media advent what you're saying?
Well, yeah, social media, definitely. Yeah. But I'd ask you the question in terms of, has media reporting changed?
Absolutely it has, and not necessarily for the better.
Well, and that would be a huge issue, I would suggest, in our industry, because certainly media at one point in time used to be about reporting a story and how it would go about.
Now it was kicks, marks, handballs, damaged knees, hamstrings.
And, yep. And it's great you see it that way, because I see it more opinion-based now.
Oh, absolutely. That's what it's become. But also, too, just to – I'm not going to be defensive about this. I'll be open about anything you want to ask me about media here. But any industry has to change. Any industry has to move with whatever the times are within that industry. But, and as footballers have moved out of being just people who were once part-time into being the biggest celebrities we've got, whether they like it or not, that's where they've moved. The media has moved –
But do you think media has changed in the sense that now there is such a demand to be first that the ethical component with that has been lost?
Look, I think you'd be surprised how much ethics is still applied, in all honesty. I can understand why you and others regularly do ask the question of ethics, but look, you do have a fair inkling of what goes on behind the scenes. And you're well aware of not just dealings with this organisation but others, that there are some responsible or many responsible journalists
there
out
there. There are. No doubt there are. And I think that that's not necessarily the mainstream media that I'm concerned about.
Yep.
It's that the race to be first and the race to do other things from other satellite-type arrangements that all of a sudden create a bigger, wider problem that you can't control in the media landscape. Now, I've seen some classic examples, even personally with clients that I've dealt with, when all of a sudden an issue is raised and the amount of people that are raising that issue or think that they know or
without giving up names here, I'm fascinated by this because I think our listeners would be. Tell me what happens with that when it just takes off to the point where you can't control it.
Well, it's social media.
So after a Friday night game? Is it after?
Well, it's whenever. And it could be any time, any place. The issue and the concern that I think that anybody in the industry would support is that you can't control what it used to be. So it used to be a story where a journalist such as yourself would ring 10 years ago and say, I'm running a story in tomorrow's paper. And then you've got overnight to basically talk you through the situation. And
put the two sides together.
Manage the story the best you can.
Yep.
All of a sudden, before you get the opportunity to even understand that there's a story, the story's out there. It's gone. It's gone. It's been retweeted. It's been spread. It's been liked. It's been shared. It's all over the marketplace.
A lot of the times though, Marty, we, and I say we as in the entire industry, this is everyone here, we're dealing with a story that's not factually correct.
And that's the concern. And so
we as journos though, and again, let's just have this conversation up front and above board. That is not our problem. If social media has taken that story to the maelstrom that it's become, and it happens every week in some form, doesn't it?
The problem, Damien, is when it's innuendo, it's speculation, and words that are reported are things like speculation or it is believed or sources close to. And
there is that advent of the mainstream media picking up on the inverted commas, the rumour, which exactly. It never once traditionally did. I'll concede that
correct.
Point.
And then you talk about social media then picks up on that. And then all of a sudden it's innuendo, it's speculation, and it goes to the point where at the end of the day, no matter what you do or what you say, mud sticks. And it gets to the point where it's frustrating from people on our side of the fence is the sense that you can't then come out and give people an honest answer because their mind or their view is already made up by the time you get the opportunity to do it.
And even commenting on whatever issue it is, factual or absolutely made up, it's another layer of the story that gets reported on, isn't it?
So
you're in that.
And it just keeps going and going and going and going. So I believe that, you know, to get back on topic with what you said is that I think it's a real issue and social media,
you know, there's no
doubt is an
issue. There's no solution to this.
There isn't. Because
so we're stuck with this situation.
We are because technology, all right, and we can talk about gambling and we can talk about all these other issues that we have in our game at the moment. And let's not just talk about our game. Let's talk about society. Like you see this everywhere in society at the moment is that technology is moving faster than actually what we know to do, what we can do with it. So again, we talk about a story. And by the time it's innuendo or it's a rumor or whatever, it is a story. People believe it. It's shared everywhere. It's on Twitter. It's on Facebook. And it's liked by thousands, hundreds of thousands. And it's just got some huge control. And then all of a sudden.
All right. So what happens? What happens? Because it's too simple to say don't go on social media. That's the worst thing you can say to someone, I feel.
And it's hard then for a player because they're missing out on an opportunity.
What I mean. So what do we do?
To grow their market and their value because their market and their value is social media. If you've got 150,000 people that follow you on Instagram, all of a sudden a brand likes that, you know, that's an opportunity for a player to earn some money for their name, image and likeness. So it's not fair for them to be saying sit off social media. But the solution is to better educate. And I know I said this out on Twitter not so long ago, but there's got to be some better laws, or there's got to be something in place out there at a much higher level that says that if you're going to basically have a crack at you on social media, that's just like me coming to you on the street and saying those things to you.
But again, that is not going to change at all, and it's certainly not going to change quickly.
I believe it has to, because you can't say something on a Twitter handle or a Facebook handle that is coming from you. If I write an email to you and I abuse you on an email, that's coming from me. Mm. So then why all of a sudden can I get my Twitter and abuse someone on Twitter that clearly has my name on it, clearly has my image on it, which everybody, I believe, on social media should have for a start.
Well, is your industry attempting to do something about this?
Well,
they
do, because when things happen, and you know, credit to the Players Association, as soon as things happen, they act, they help. There's no doubt about it. They're fantastic in that space. But the problem is, even they can only do so much. And we as an industry can only do so much. And that is the most frustrating thing, I think, in our game at the moment. And we're seeing so many cases every like almost weekly. We've seen racial vilification through social media. We're seeing, you know, people.
I've got to be on that. The calling out component is, again, not going to make it go away.
But then you
because
can't
you're calling
sit
out
down.
Someone who's anonymous.
Yeah, and that's my
by
problem.
Calling it out, you're giving a life to the, in inverted commas, the story.
And that's my problem, Damien, is that we are allowing anonymous people through social media laws to come out and say whatever they like and hide behind a false name. That just, I don't understand.
Ignore is actually a better policy on a lot of these occasions, I feel.
Well, you'd probably cop it better than anyone.
Ignore.
But how does that help? But it doesn't get an end game. It doesn't assist the players, because unfortunately, for some reason, the players and any athlete, and you can even listen to talkback radio, there's this feeling that they're fair game. And because they're out there playing footy.
And they earn good money. There's nothing about earning good money that allows people to have a greater crack at someone.
Well, we can walk down the street and go past the four of our big banks here in Docklands, and I guarantee you they're earning a hell of a lot more money than what these players are, and they don't cop the social media scrutiny that our players do.
Without wanting you to divulge any confidences, and again, I just to back over that, I know you can't, but just the issues that are in front of us all the time now, the gambling, the alcoholism, the drug taking, and enmeshed in all of it is the mental health parts. What can you tell us about that for this podcast?
Well, it's scary, mental health. There's no doubt about it. And you would need to, again, talk to people that are very experienced and trained in this area. But from what I have seen, it's an issue in society, full stop. Then you portion that to football and you look at all these things that add up, and it's performance, it's expectation, it's social media, it's, you know, 24/7, the desire to compete, and it all gets thrown under one umbrella, and all of a sudden the pressure comes in within that, and you might be out of contract and all these different variables, you might be injured. And I often say the greatest enemy a lot of the time for a footballer is time and how they use that time. So when they do get free time.
Have they got too much time under the club watch and the club control?
Well, I don't think they do. I think they've done really well lately in terms of allowing a lot more time. Certainly back when I was playing, you had no time. You know, you didn't get the day a week, or you know, now a lot of clubs in mid-season buys let them have 5 days to get away from the club. And I think the clubs are really trying. And I think fairness to them in that space, because they understand, appreciate what we're talking about now. And that's the issue. The issue is how they feel that time. And a lot of people with different stress handle things differently. and they look for other avenues and they look for other outlets. And what do they do in that time that then contributes to potentially some of these issues that we're talking about? And technology is a huge player in this. So social media and reading negative comments, does that impact a person? Absolutely it does. Then you say don't read it, but it's very hard sometimes.
No, I'm saying you can't say that to anyone. I can see that. You can't tell someone to not read. I mean, it's the new norm.
Correct.
But there must be a better mechanism to deal with what it is that you're referring to, is more my point. I'm not claiming to have any idea what that mechanism is.
Yeah. Well, again, we need to get to an industry. Well, I think society, and I think this is where you look at other leaders in society that need to come together and put their heads together and go, hey, we got to protect this space, because I can tell you right here and now, it's happening in schools. You know, the social media bullying and the social media things that are happening, and you've got children like I do, and that's my greatest fear as a parent. So we have to do something to ensure that these people are better protected, because we can definitely talk about it impacting footballers, but then in terms of their time management and what they're doing in that space, they're filling it potentially with things that would be adding stress to their lives. And I think technology is a huge player. Like, people are with their phones 24/7. I'm guilty of it. I can't put my phone away because it might be work. Yeah. It might be something going on, as I'm sure you probably are. And that's the issue. And guess what you can do on your phone? You can gamble on it. You can go on social media with it. You can do anything on it. It's a 24/7 computer that allows you to access anything. You can Google things. You can search things. You can get yourself into a lot of trouble with it. And that's the issue a lot of the time. And I think that it's having a better balance. And I see the athletes particularly that have a better balance away from football, that can put their phone away, they can shut themselves out, they have other interests, whether it's study, whether it's property, whatever it may be, whether it's going and surfing and, you know, surfing for 2 hours and leave your phone in the car, whatever it may be, they have a better balance and a better aspect to life. And I think that a lot of these issues that we're talking about is that it's a release, and sometimes it's a release in the wrong areas.
What is, in your eyes, in your experiences, the biggest problem for the game? Gambling, alcoholism, drugs?
Well, I guess, again, I don't know the specifics on the data in terms of it, but from what I know and what I understand, I think that there's, you know, some real issues around mental health. Now, mental health, whether that has one of those three components to it, I couldn't give you the exact answer right now, but I know that there are issues in the game right now, and I think people are looking for that real sexy topic and say, well, yeah, it's 100% gambling, or it's 100% this, or whatever it may be. But let's be clear that a lot of these issues that we're talking about, there's a lot that is playing out before it gets to that point. And we see the article come out on the weekend, just gone by, which anonymously claims X amount of players are doing something. I look at that and I say, how does that help? How does that help the industry? Because all you've done now is get a question like you've asked me now and say, well, it must be gambling. Gambling is the biggest issue we've got in the game, when we've got players that have had obviously confided in something, and then all of a sudden now it's in the paper. And this is the speculation, the innuendo you and I talk about, is that now guess what everyone's doing all weekend? They're asking who those players are. Who are those players? I heard it's this person. I heard it's that person. And it just grows and grows and grows. And that's the issue that we face. Excuse me. And that's the biggest problem that we now face, is that through that innuendo and people trying to work out who that person is, we'll just create a bigger issue.
When it comes to the drugs side of it, Marty, are you comfortable with the drugs policy that's in play? The illicit drugs policy?
They are trying to do something about it, aren't they? So it's a voluntary system that the AFL has created with the Players Association to try and help and educate players around it. And I think people get confused by that, and they think that all of a sudden that they lose sight the fact that the AFL didn't need to do that and the Players Association didn't need to do it, but they've actually brought it in and they've actually tried to do something about it.
Do you think players have missed games of football that haven't actually been linked to that drugs policy?
Not to my knowledge. I wouldn't know the answer to that.
Do you think players miss games of football for reasons that aren't necessarily relayed to the public in a truthful way?
What, you mean they might have a calf when it's a knee, or it might be...
No, it might be a gambling problem they're dealing with. It might be a drugs issue they're dealing with. It might be an alcoholism issue.
I don't know specifics, but every club is entitled to pick a side based on what they feel matches their values that they have within their football club. And I'll ask you, if you're a media and you come out and you say a player's missing this week because of a gambling issue, what are you going to do?
I wouldn't be touching it, full stop. What would
the industry do?
If the industry finds us being lied to, if they're asking a question about why a player's missing and being told a knee and it's for another reason, I think there's an issue there in terms of.
But is
why.
The issue with the
whether
club?
Whether it gets reported, you yeah. only deal with but what's
is,
in front of you.
Is the issue with the club, or is the issue the fact that the club doesn't have the confidence
yeah.
in how?
I totally get why you would do that. Absolutely,
and that's the issue.
Why you do it.
Yeah.
But what I do have, and we spoke to Paul Marsh in that same chair you're in, and again, I know he's got a very different view to it, and most players do too. But I don't know why we call it a drugs policy when it comes to this, because policies attempt to find issues and then sanction. This one, to me, doesn't. The facts are there's only been one third strike under this policy, and the third strike was a police charge of a player.
Yeah.
But are you saying players have missed games?
No, I'm saying in terms of the policy, they have. They have found people, and they, well, in that case, they have had a situation where someone has been suspended because of it.
But the third strike was a police charge.
Yeah.
The players get removed from the system and the randomness of the testing regularly throughout the process.
Mm.
You had no issue with that?
Well,
Should we maybe just call it a drugs code of conduct rather than a drugs policy?
But again, I think everyone's jumping up and down by something that the AFL has actually tried to bring in. Like, has anybody else followed the codes lead in this area in Australian sport?
So your exposure to it, be it through your own list of players and obviously with conversations you have with others around the industry, do you feel it is the best mechanism to deal with that part of the problems that players clearly have?
Well, you need to understand again the root of the problem. And I think that too many times we just jump up and down and we get from 0 to 100 real quick and we think, oh, that's the worst thing. Everything's the worst. I firmly believe that people make choices, and people make choices based on things that are going on in their world. And I can only talk about myself, and I would want to know why a particular person decided to make that choice and then help them, because you can give them an opportunity to come back and you can give them an opportunity to be better as a result of it. And I don't think that that's anything wrong with that. And I think we've seen some great examples, just in life in general, is that when someone puts up their hand and says, oh, hey, I've made some wrong choices, I haven't dealt with that the best way I could, but then you put the mechanisms and things in place. And as long as that person does the work to get back to where they can, I think that's a good thing. And I think that's what life's about. Life's a lot about how you respond and how you come back from something, as opposed to you make one mistake, you're gone, see you later, and we just don't tolerate. Well, I think we got to educate, and I can see what they're trying to do.
Yep. You've been in the management game now for 10 years,
yep.
thereabouts,
yep.
having played 8 games of AFL football for the great Brisbane Lions. Your first game was as a late inclusion for one of the all-time greats.
Yeah, Jonathan Brown.
There you go.
Yeah.
2005.
Yep.
Hard team to crack into.
It was. No doubt. No doubt. You talk about social media and you talk about people. Don't worry, I've caught my fair share of criticism for only playing 8 games. It's like I've failed. And
it's 8 more than most, mate.
Well, again, you just know that you cop that. And that's, I guess, society and people want to have a crack at those things. But yeah, I'm absolutely proud of the fact that I did that. I'm
also listed as a Western Bulldog player as well.
Yeah, well, look, I mean, from my point of view, it was just great to be, if anything, an experience, an era like that while coming in at the end of it. To look back and go that was one of the most successful teams in Australian sport, how it was assembled, how it was managed, the people skills that were in play from people like Lee Matthews, Michael Voss, it was just fantastic. And I took a lot out of that, and I grew a lot as a person from that. And it was just a sensational environment and really highlighted how a team can be successful.
One of the bigger moments you and everyone else in your space has had to deal with is the Essendon's drug saga of 2013 and onwards, and to some point is still influencing and affecting people today. You had a very high profile member of that club at that time, still do, Dyson Heppel. Obviously, a lot of your viewing of it was through his eyes. Do you look back on any of that now with regret, remorse, disappointment, or how do you look back on it now?
Very difficult time and really hard. And you talk about being there for somebody and wearing many hats as an agent. For me personally, I have such a care and I guess almost I have a strong connection and bond with Dyson that I care so much about him as a person that to see someone go through that particular time in his life, it was one of support and guidance and just to help him the best way he could. And a lot of the time it was an ear, just to listen and to guide and to help him as best as I could. So I think that, I don't think you can look back and say things should have been done differently because, to be perfectly honest with you, I don't think we'll have another example of what occurred ever again in our game.
Don't want to weigh this down too much or too long with the specifics of what happened, but now that we've had time to reflect, did we do it right?
In terms of
everyone, I know it's probably a too complex question to answer in a one sweep, but the club's decision to go down the path it went down primarily?
Oh, well, looking back, I mean, history will say it wasn't, wouldn't they? Because, I mean, it's pretty clear.
I don't even think history needed it. We needed history, did we?
Exactly. I mean, it's pretty clear and pretty evident. You had players miss because of a program. But I think that what the club did do well is that they changed things and they moved quickly and they tried to work through. And you know, people inside that space like Xavier Campbell and, they really got on the front foot and tried to help the club and protect the club and were really proactive in trying to keep that group of players together. And I think coming out of it now, looking back and say, I think they did a really good job of being able to do that. In terms of the player agency space and guiding a player through that time, it was obviously difficult because you're dealing with so many different pieces that you're not normally accustomed to dealing with. You know, you've got lawyers, you've got barristers, you've got WADA, you've got ASADA, you've got the AFL. It was just so many different pieces and such a big beast that was just coming from all different reactions, the media. It was a really difficult time and there's no doubt that it certainly made some of those players stronger for it. And you're just so proud that one in particular, you know, my situation dealing with Dyson, that one, he's come out of it well. He's back playing good footy. He's the captain of the club. You just hope that now, that sort of little period in our game is just we move on from.
How many offers of a serious nature did he get when he was out of contract during that period?
Well, none. None is a serious. No one obviously put an offer together at that time, but it was more no doubt that clubs during that time were asking questions whether or not players would want to return. And in Dyson's situation, it was always he wanted to return to Essendon.
We haven't spoken about specifics for the reasons we've given and for the reasons which are obvious, but one that we have to ask specifically is Brian Lake, given how public his problems have become. And you're very close with Brian. You've been there for him and with him throughout all his ordeal post-football. It must be pretty harrowing at times to have a friendship with someone like Brian and to see how difficult life has been for him post-football.
It has. And these are the sorts of situations that you don't want to be dealing with people, particularly someone like Brian, who's a very flamboyant, fun, happy person that we all love because he's a character. And to the people on the outside, they always looked at him as a bit quirky. Certainly on the inside, he's a loving, caring person that really, really is a loyal guy. And a situation that, you know, post-footy and trying to work out that identity. And I think that a lot of players and people and athletes across the board really struggle with, once they finish playing sport, their identity is that particular person. So whether they're a cricketer or a footballer, they see their identity as that. And it's very hard to then separate and say that, no, you're Brian Lake who plays football, and then now we got to go do something else. And I think that that's just unfortunately something that Brian's had to deal with and come to terms with. In terms of how he's doing right now, really well. And a lot of it is around structure. A lot of it is around having something to look forward to and enjoying normality of life and being normal. And I believe that he's in that place now where he's got that normality and structure and he's doing really well.
Who's your favourite on your list?
Oh, they're all my favourite.
Cade Simpson?
You have your different relationships, no doubt, and they're all different for many reasons. And, you know, you look at a lot of them and you just marvel in what they've been able to do. Like a Cade Simpson, you go, wow. You love him because he just gets the best out of himself. He's no fuss, no frills, and keeps going. You talk about a Ryan Burton that you spoke about earlier. I mean, the kid had a broken leg and was out of the game for 18 months and clubs were worried about drafting him, you know, and now look at him. You talk about Dyson Heppel. You love him because of what he went through as a person, as an athlete, and he's stronger for it. He's captaining one of the biggest clubs in Australia and doing really well. You know, Brian Lake, you put your arm around him and want to help him, because if you're going to be there through the good times when they win three premierships, you certainly got to be there through the bad times as well to help him. So you build relationships and you enjoy the relationships, and I think that's what keeps me involved in this game. And it's hard because you, as an agent, particularly from my experience, is you're independent and you see things independently, and you're always trying to give your athlete the best possible piece of advice, but also help them you can. And you, in my view, don't make the decision. You only present options. And I think a lot of people get confused by that and think, oh, they have power, or they're doing this, or they're doing that. And that's the difference, I feel, from probably from public opinion to actually what you do.
Marty Pass, thank you for your time today on In the Game.
Thank you very much. Cheers.